You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Assunta Serra. Assunta, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Hi.
So, Assunta, let's begin with, I want to talk about your history and a number of things, but let's just begin with, what is it that you're working on right now?
Okay, since about 2012, I started drawing and cutting paper with the intent to break away from the box and experiment with irregular shapes. Once I decide on a shape, I then have a drawing fabricated into a custom-shaped, asymmetrical, quadrilateral canvas, or sometimes just on small birch panels. My theme in the series that I'm working on now is cosmology. And the first painting is a supernova explosion. Even though this was a new shaped canvas for me, division of space, color and light were always very important to me. But this new shape actually presented a lot of compositional problems. One side has like an extreme elongation that draws the eye to its point. It felt awkward, out of the box. Where do I make that first mark in the process of mark making? I looked at Elizabeth Murray, but her shape canvases were organic with organic forms. I wanted a geometric shaped canvas with organic subject matter. I had made a conceptual decision to begin with this supernova explosion, thinking of the Big Bang, a singularity. I then began dividing the canvas in front of me with gestural drawing. I think of the universe as I paint. There's no straight line. It is not symmetrical. It is constantly moving. Nothing is perfect, and stars are not always spherical. Images from NASA, astronomy, Discovery, and National Geographic, to name a few, float in my head as I proceed to make a painting. Sometimes the process starts like a full orchestra, like listening to a Rossini La Gazza Ladra, and then the next day it falls flat. I ask myself, what was I thinking? What am I trying to do? I worked on the second painting, which I titled The Precipice, for a few months, and asked my artist friend, George Rodart, an artist whose opinions I respect, to see it. His reaction was, don't touch it. I didn't, and moved on to the third shape. I also purchased a book at this time on the elements, thinking how the elements disperse after a supernova explosion. So I began actually, and what I'm doing now still, is adding painted images of metals, copper, iron, and gold in my compositions. I am now on number 14. I sought to create tension between the geometric and the organic. The orientation of these paintings can be adjusted as the larger ones are hung with cleats. My hope is that the viewer sees this work as abstract, ever-moving patterns that continue beyond the borders of the painting surface, as fragments of asymmetrical trapezoids and indented triangles with cosmic particles moving through time and space.
So let me ask you this. It's a wonderful description of it, because it's always hard, you know, to talk about visual work and describe it, but you're doing a great job there with that work. Let's go. I'd like to talk more about that, but I'd also like to talk about your history, because I know it helps to inform your work, and that's partly where you're from. Can you tell me a little bit about your history and that's part of the context that these are made in?
Well, okay, to begin with, I kind of wasn't sure if I found painting or painting found me. I mean, it was hard to tell which it was, but the pull of the artistic life started with a casual introduction to painting at a neighborhood gallery with friends. And it was at their recommendation that I submitted an oil painting on paper for a competition, which was at the Scarab Club in downtown Detroit. As I sat there in the audience while they judged the show, I was shocked to receive a Best of Show. And that night is when I knew I needed classes to repeat what I had created. I really didn't know what I did. So I enrolled at community college, Macomb Community College, for like one class one night a week. My days at that time were filled with caring for three children, and my youngest was 3 months. I'd married young and knew that I wanted children, but now I wanted to create, to draw, to paint. But I struggled. I struggled to find time to paint and study. But I was very persistent, determined. And my sisters kind of always said I was a little bit more stubborn than they were. I have three sisters. So with that persistence, 10 years later, I received a BFA from Center for Creative Studies, which is located in downtown Detroit, just behind the Detroit Institute of Arts. But I was fortunate that fall, after 10 years of going to school for a BFA, I received a grant from the Michigan Council of the Arts, and the following year, I received a second grant. The two grants provided me to have a studio in Pontiac while working with the painter Barbara Price, who was then the dean of Cranbrook. And that is where, it was on Saginaw Street in Pontiac, I painted seven large, they were narrative, autobiographic, and they were large. They were like 5 foot by 6 foot paintings.
And that was in the years, now you're in Michigan, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, I was living in Michigan, and it's about 3 years after I got my bachelor's degree that I was divorced in 1983. And then another 3 years later, in 86, is when I began a concentrated study at Brooklyn College. And by this time, my three children were also in college, but they were in Detroit. It wasn't easy, but we managed to stay close, even though we were miles apart. As I look back, though, it was a financial miracle for me to be able to, you know, to go to school in New York and have three kids in college at the same time. To this day, I don't know how we did it. I mean, lots of loans. But while at Brooklyn College, I studied with Philip Perlstein, Lee Bontecue, Lois Dodd, Leonard Anderson. They were my professors, but they were also creating their own art. And, I mean, Lee Bontecue's powerful dynamic sculptures and then Lois Dodd's plein air paintings. And Philip Perlstein, who always encouraged me to find my own path. And then I had Bill Williams, who advised me was to take my time to develop a style.
Wow, those are some incredible mentors you had there. Those are amazing teachers to be around.
It was the best time. It was the best time. They were all there. Because shortly after, I mean, they started, they weren't there any longer. They stopped teaching. But I was figurative at that time. But I was also drawn to invention, and that's why, you know, Perlstein knew that, yes, I was figurative and was good with the figure, but I know I was looking for something else. So anyway, so I also got a graduate fellowship at Brooklyn College, and that had helped with the finances, and also shared a studio there. And then, of course, it was an unusual to see me there painting till like the early hours of the morning. So I graduated with an MFA in 1989, and I was really fortunate because I immediately shared a studio space with a fellow student, Susan Grossman, in Tribeca for 7 years. But I also started teaching as an adjunct professor, and that was at NYU, Bloomfield College, Montclair State University. And I taught art classes at Montclair Art Museum, the Art School of Art. And at this time, I felt an affinity to the Roman god Janus at this juncture, like looking forward and back at the same time. I was really stressed that I had gotten this far, but didn't have any time to paint.
Right.
So then, I continued on, and then luckily I joined First Street Gallery, which is, you know, an artist-run gallery. And a lot of the artists are from Brooklyn College. I had two solo shows there, and then it was actually at my second show, which was titled In Transit, that the curator from the Michael Ingvar Gallery saw my show and invited me to join, you know, the gallery, Michael Ingvar Gallery, which I did in 1996. And that's where things changed for me, because now I began to show, sell my work at a commercial gallery, and I really liked having a solo show every 2 years and inclusion in a group show every year. And, of course, it was the following year, 1997 also, that the Metropolitan Transit Authority selected me to create a painting of the recently renovated station as a poster for Arts for Transit. And Grand Center was really special for me. That is because I was born in Italy and came to America when I was 8. I saw my father for the very first time because he was in America while, you know, we were in Italy. And with my mother and two of my three sisters, we boarded the train to Detroit at Grand Central. And now, after many years of living in Detroit, I was thrilled to be revisiting Grand Central, making a poster, selling my work, and having a studio on Broadway. And it was also really wonderful seeing my poster in all or most of the subway stations in New York City. I was living in Montclair, New Jersey, and commuting to my studio. I felt very much a part of the New York art world.
And is that the gallery you're currently with now?
Yes, although he may be phasing out, I think he's had some ill health. So, but, you know, I've been with him for like 20 years.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I know that you've had some history in the war. Is that correct, as I was reading about you?
Yes, that is correct. It was during World War II where my mother, with her four daughters, struggled for survival. And for my mother, it was the worst.
And then this was in Italy, right?
Yes, this was in Italy. Yes, it was in Italy. And my father was in America, but my mother, with her four daughters, were in Italy. And for my mother, it was like the worst experience of her life because she saw me wounded on my upper right arm when I was struck by a shrapnel. That night was around.
How did that happen? I mean, how is it? That's horrifying. That was,
yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, we had to take refuge in a cave because, you know, our town, Cebrano, is between Rome and Naples. And we were very close to Monte Cassino, and where a lot of bombardment took place. And I don't know, I was 4 years old, and I, from the stories that my parents told, is that my mother, I was probably out in the field chasing a butterfly, and I got hit by a shrapnel. But that night, you know, like about 1 a.m., my mother and one of our relatives drove us to the Red Cross in Naples. And there were so many wounded people there, they wouldn't let her stay while they cared for me. But my wound was infected. My mother, they told my mother that she had to leave and leave me there. But my mother refused to leave me there and said, if she is going to die, she'll die with me. So they gave us some supplies, and my mother took care of me. As a result of my injuries, though, my hand would freeze shut, and I would literally have to try to open each finger of my right hand and wait for my hand to feel normal. During this time, this is also when we were, you know, in a cave for maybe a week. I mean, I don't think it was, you know, in a really long time. But I remember it was cold and damp. And then, but a good memory for me was seeing an icicle that seemed to sparkle in the dark. And it wasn't until I came to America, and which was like 4 years later, and we had a Dr. Carbone in Detroit, who actually found pieces of metal in my arm, and that's why my hair, you know, my hand would freeze up like that. And he removed them. So then I found, you know, writing easier. But also at this time, you know, I didn't speak a word of English when I came to America. So it was time to learn the language. And I had started school in Detroit in the third grade. And because of the language barrier, though, you know, I was giving math problems in every class for about a year. And my father kept telling them that, you know, she'll learn, just give her time, she'll learn, because they were thinking of maybe putting me into a special school because I couldn't speak the language. But, you know, with time, I did learn. So so that was, you know, the years, you know, with the war, which is, and sometimes the cave or, you know, the black hole seems to show up in my work. And sometimes I wonder if that black hole was, you know, a premonition of, you know, the cave that we had stayed in.
That's an amazing story. And so I'm glad you shared that with us. So now you're in your studio, you're making these works, and what will happen with the current works you're making? Will you be having a show of those in the next
few
years?
Well, I just, this has been a really good year because I had a show. I had a show at Center Galleries in Detroit, and it was it's really a very large, cavernous kind of spacious gallery, and my six new large shaped paintings were hung. They were hung like fragments in the universe, and because, like I said, they're hung on cleats. One was hung very high, and then we had one quite close to the floor, and then there was like two that looked like they were maybe having a conversation. So the curator there, Michelle Perrone, she had the vision for the show, and then with the sculptor Robert Sestek and glass artist Kim Hardy. And the show really looked terrific because I think it was the largest space that I ever, you know, exhibited my work, and they were large, and it was just, you know, it was just wonderful to see. So that was, you know, really terrific. And then, well, I also had my first solo show in 2013 at the Hunterdon Art Museum. And those, I showed large drawings, but they were also based on science. And one of the drawings also was, you know, a shape. It was on a shaped paper that I had cut into these quadrilateral, where no two sides are equals. And so so those two shows, and that one show in Detroit was this year. And then I'm really, you know, since maybe 1999, I've been really interested in science, more into astronomy and science, and I'm really excited about all the daily discoveries and the visuals, the links, the articles, YouTube. And I think it is a very exciting time for science, and I am very interested in where the physicists are going with their ideas on dark matter and dark energy. And that's what's going to make the physics of tomorrow, and I'm interested in how art can reflect our understanding of that universe that is to come. Because of the dark matter and dark energy are really at the focus of a lot of the new research. So I'm excited, and that is like my subject matter as well.
Well, that's exciting, and it's great to hear that you're making those now, and everything you've told us. Are these particular works that you're doing now going to be shown in the coming year? Is there a show scheduled yet for these?
Not yet. I'm working right now. I'm working on them, and I've got a couple of things, you know, but in the making, so I don't have a set date yet, but I do have something, you know, that is, you know, to be scheduled yet. So, but, you know, my joy is going to the studio and painting, and, that makes me very happy, as long as I can go there. And I always work with my canvases hanging on the wall. So it's and I'm still in the same studio I've been in over 20 years. I'm right on Broadway between Prince and Houston, and I'm just really, at this time in my life, I'm like so happy because I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing. I'm not teaching right now, but my full time is devoted to, you know, to my passion, which is to paint. And so it's exciting times for me, but I do, you know, I also am a mother, and I do make, you know, I kind of have both, you know, my creative spirit and my children kind of coexist. And so I still juggle seeing, you know, my three children. And I have four grandchildren as well now. So.
Wow. That is a lot to juggle. It sounds like you're doing it successfully. I want to ask you before we go, is there any books you're reading now that you'd want to share with us? I can imagine what they're about, but I'll let you tell me. Is there anything, it could be off the subject or fiction or anything?
Yes, actually, I just purchased a new book yesterday. There was Divine Pleasures, which was a exhibition at the Met. I'm really interested in color and kind of consider myself a colorist. And looking at Indian paintings, and so this book, yesterday I quickly, you know, like looked through it. Of course, always more visual, you know, so I, because it has fantastic reproductions of Indian paintings. So I haven't, you know, really started to read it yet, but with that book plus looking at butterflies and flowers, because I also like my garden and flowers, and of course looking at Matisse. So I use it more for color studies in my painting. I mean, the colors that are ascribed to the images in the universe, many are seen, you know, more or less through the infrared, and therefore they're not necessarily a natural color. But I use, I'm really excited about, you know, reading the book, but also the visuals that I could see yesterday's, you know, like brilliant color and wonderful reproductions. So I'm always like looking, you know, for color schemes or color, you know, what one color does next to another color. I start out actually my painting where I use possibly a warm color underneath the whole canvas. And then maybe the second coat will be like a cool color. So I like layering and transparency. So, you know, I use color intuitively, but I also look, you know, at the color wheel for split complementaries and triad and complementary colors. So, you know, sure. So this, you know, it's, I have right now, I feel like I have the time, you know, to really delve into it all. And that's what I'm doing.
Well, that sounds like a good book too, that you picked up.
Yes, thank you.
I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure getting to know your work, and I want to thank you for sharing that with me.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.